Sometimes you might feel trapped between the right and the left. No one listens when you say taxation is theft.
But there's a place where people know harsh government brings tears. So grab some glue and adrenochrome. Let's make the timeline weird. Friends against government. Friends against government.
She's
super Will Wheaton-y.
Like
basically the female Will Wheaton at this point.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. Like I used to watch, and this is the thing. Like I don't hate most people wholesale. Like
no,
I used to watch Will Wheaton's Tabletop on YouTube, where he would do like the tabletop board game reviews like a random selection of people. That's really entertaining. It's just when he starts to get up his own ass real hard and start thinking that he's a celebrity,
guy is such an ally, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Super hard.
Super hard super ally. Hard. Which is great that the term ally is a negative thing to everybody at this point.
Right.
Everybody agrees that that's not a good thing anymore.
Yeah. Like, you just said that, and I was like, bad to hear.
Yeah, ugh, God, yeah. That's what Will Wheaton gives me. I guess that's what Felicia Day probably gives you, too.
Yeah, that's about right. You know?
Well, G-Man, what's up? How are you? Are you off Twitter for good? Did you, disconnect forever?
So I'm just taking another break. I've found that I can usually handle about a week on, 2 weeks on, and then about 2 weeks off.
It's like running an oil rig.
Yeah, basically, you know, or being on the boats. Like, it's just not healthy for me to be there full time anymore.
What made the? Because you used to be, quote unquote, always online.
In fact, always online. Just some personal stuff, you know, but mostly during that time, I had chance for reflection, and I was like, man, you know, I feel the stress levels every time that I'm on this website, and it's just the introspection that I was doing. I was like, man, I can just feel myself not being healthy right now.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm very disconnected. Like, I don't know what's going on in the news, and I miss out on stuff. God, I'm so mad, too, because I deactivated, 4 days before Great Value Kennedy talked about gun control at Kent State.
Great
I was so
value
pissed off.
Kennedy.
I was so pissed off, man.
What a nickname. That's amazing. Yeah. Yeah, a lot of shit. Did you see that Donald Trump called himself? Oh God, no. He said he had unpassable wisdom. Did you see this?
I did not see that.
I'm gonna have to pull that one up. That's an incredible.
Yeah,
tweet.
Pull that one up, Bird. That's a good. I think it's unmatched. Me and my infinite and unmatched wisdom.
Yeah.
Just something so over the top that you're like.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
It's so over the top that you know he's. You know, yanking the chain, but
right.
He
the fact that he thinks it's funny to yank that chain is like.
Oh, and let me guess, they totally fell for it, right? Like,
absolutely, obviously.
But here's the thing, G-Man. That statement is sandwiched between a really obscure. Here, listen to this whole thing. This is from 11:38 a.m. on October 7th, 2019. Donald Trump tweets. As I have stated strongly before, and just to reiterate, if Turkey does anything that I, in my great and unmatched wisdom, consider to be off limits, I will totally destroy and obliterate the capital economy of Turkey. In parentheses, I've done before. They must, comma, with Europe and others, comma, watch over. And then there's an ellipsis, and it goes on. It's fucking madness. It's not.
Yeah.
I'm not. Look. I'm not a. I don't consider myself to be Trump deranged. I feel like I've right. been pretty even keeled on this whole thing. This is there's something mentally going on here, right? At this point, or is that he just is. Still? Is he? Does he still have it?
It? Yeah, I think there's two things here. There's one is either or he's mentally deranged. I actually don't think that's the one.
I don't either. But I kind of really wish that that was the case.
Right, because I think that the second option is actually even scarier. And the second option is the fact that he recognizes what gets in people's heads, and we're a reflection of what he is, you know, a reflection of him in some way, of like, he knows that this is what he needs to say in order to get people, like, you know, geared up and riled up. And that's like almost a more, because that's like a reflection of the people.
It also yeah. would stand testament to how well he could play that fiddle, right? If he was really this whole yeah. time, it was just an act.
I mean, in my mind, like, he's the greatest WWE wrestler in all of history.
Yeah.
Because his kayfabe ability and his ability to play the heel, it's definitely the second thing you were talking about, Carr. Like, it's definitely on purpose. Part of it is he's starting to get a couple of screws loose, probably, and that's why he's not very good at what he does as, like, a politician.
Right.
But as far as, like, a manipulator, world class. Like, there are few that can even come close, you know? Like, and I think that the level of stage that he's at only enhances it. It's only multiplying his ability, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because there are people, like, that didn't like him before he even thought about running for president, but no one really thought about him. And now, like, he's literally in everyone's heads every day, all the time, and they couldn't stop even if they wanted to. They can't get him out.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I think and now I think he's developed such a library, like for instance, like Bird, when we were first podcasting, there wasn't anything we could throw it back to. There wasn't any, we didn't have any history, we didn't have any developed anything.
No.
So we were just kind of making, you know, we were just laying track as we were running the train.
Right.
But once you develop like some kind of library, it just makes it a lot easier to be like, oh, we talked about this one time, so let's talk about this again, or we, you know, well, oh, let's tug on this string, or let's tug on that string, and you know, whatever.
Yeah, and I really do think that, like, it's one of those things where I try not to indulge myself in, like, the overly conspiratorial stuff, because I basically believe that every conspiracy is true now. I do the opposite.
I tweeted that yesterday. I was like, at this point, I'm willing to believe anything you have to say about Bohemian Grove. I'm with you. I understand.
Yeah, I mean... it's just literally easier to believe every conspiracy at this point. But I mean, the fact remains, we're in what, 2019? We've had almost 3 solid years of the Trump presidency, and there's so much that he's
so
just
much.
Done
yeah
that people just don't really even think about or care about or remember. And so much that happens under his watch, because they're so absorbed in the kayfabe.
Yeah.
Like, it's such an effective tactic that, I mean, it's gone a lot further than I thought it would, to be honest. I thought the wheels would fall off of the kayfabe about 2 years in, you know, right
yeah.
around the midterms.
Yeah.
It hasn't.
Well, but the wheels haven't fallen off the kayfabe for the same reason that the WWE is still going. People love to indulge it.
Yeah.
That's true.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like the WWE, I love the metaphor, and I love the fact that kayfabe is a term that exists.
Yeah.
But you can't have an effective face without an equally effective heel.
Yep.
You know? Mm-hmm. Like, you have to have that duality, like, and he is the best heel that American politics has created in a long time.
Was Obama the face, or is the face still coming?
I'm
sorry to ask such an insane question, but
I mean, I feel like Obama was a face. He wasn't a particularly effective one, I think, because like, and it's kind of hard for me to judge a face because, like, he worked on his own team, whereas it's easier to judge the efficacy of a heel because he's working on both teams.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Because the opposite team is going to hate the face.
Yeah.
Because he's the wrong team.
Yeah.
But the heel, his job is not only to make the opposite team hate him, but it's also to convince his own team to, you know, get on board, you know, and that's something actually that, you know, being off of Twitter, like paying more attention to the people I see, like on Normie Book and out in real life and shit, here in Appalachia, man, you really do see most people are like very on board with second term Trump. Like, in the population centers, like, you've got, like, the more liberal influence in, like, the university towns and things of that nature. But, like, the wholesale populace very, very much is drinking the Kool-Aid. And that's actually historically not been the case. The most recent, or the most recent Democrat-favored states in Appalachia were only, I think, just maybe like 1996. Like, it used to be that you had a very strong chance for Democrats to win in Appalachia because a lot of them, you know, were pro-union. You got a lot of history with the coal mines.
Right.
But they really have actually, and this is where they're actually seeing the damage most, I think, where the blue team has gone away from being the party of the working class, people realize it, you know? Like, and whatever alternative they can get is what they want at this point. And, like, they're super on board. Like, there's a little bit of holdout, you know, you got some people that are kind of like in the Bernie Sanders sort of territory, which is odd to say is like the middle of the road example, but by and large, like, the division is very clear here, and the overwhelming numbers are towards Trump. And I mean, that's kind of wild, you know, like, because again, he hasn't been that effective.
Well, the effects job of the tariffs haven't kicked in yet either.
Right.
When they do, that I'm sure that'll start to shift shit over. But that's a good point that you bring up. Yeah. I guess the strategy, I mean, I thought the strategy was to get people, the Obama voters, back, but, you know, there's that silent red majority still is very much a real thing. And depending on who gets picked to oppose Donald Trump, that silent majority is going to be either louder or softer. It really depends. I was just saying this on another podcast we just recorded, but briefly, I saw a tweet that came up that was misdated, or it was from 2015. It was retweeted. It was Hillary Clinton announces she's running for president again, and I almost shit myself when I saw that. I was like, oh, God, she's doing it again. But it was from 2015. Well, I mean, I got tripped up. That would be wild. It would be nuts.
Even being off of Twitter, like, I'm seeing the rumor start to circulate that
it's hopeful. It's like wishful thinking, maybe. On the part of the media, and that may actually, because the thing about wishful thinking is it's just thinking, right? It doesn't actually translate necessarily into action ever. It's just wishful thinking. But it might signal to Hillary Clinton that she thinks she has enough support to try this. And, I don't want to be ridiculous here, but if Hillary Clinton ran and became the spoiler vote, she could forever change the Democratic Party, you know?
Oh, yeah.
She has the ability to completely turn everything on its head. And, you know, as a libertarian here who has very little to no stake in the game, I'm really happy for her to be the agent of chaos if need be.
Me too, man. Yeah. I cannot wait. I'd love it if she hopped in. That would be so fun.
Media people, if we can call ourselves that, car, like, we produce entertainment from the meat, like, based on what's happening in the news, it would be a gold mine, right? It would be a complete gold mine. There'd be GIFs circulating of people crying in public. There'd be, like, videos of screaming, and, like, there'd be protests, and there'd be blow-up dolls, and there'd be... they would go back to 2017? Just the wildest... It would be wild, right? Yep. It would be insane.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that you're actually... You're very correct about that, but I will say I think that the Democratic Party... The schism has already started, because you're starting to see the division with, like, the Ilhan Omar and, like,
they don't, AOT. Do they have a name yet, though? Do they have, like, a faction name?
I don't
yet?
Know. I mean, I've just been calling them the new
dealers,
left, you know,
or something like that.
The Watermelon Party, maybe. Like, I don't know if they have an official term. I'm pretty sure a lot of things are going to get thrown at the wall before something sticks.
Yeah, right, yeah.
But the other thing I was going to say, too, is I really don't think that we can underestimate, I think that we could underestimate. I don't think it would be possible for us to overestimate the ability the media has to influence the election, because I mean, we saw, or at least the candidates, because I mean in the 2016 we saw how much it was, you know, Hillary's gonna win, it's a lock, it's a gimme, walk off, you know, didn't even write a concession speech, and then blown out.
I know.
So I mean, and I think that the media is losing ground, and I think that this might be one of their last gasps, because if they don't get a friend in power this time, because I didn't look into it, I kind of wrote it off maybe as like red team propaganda, but maybe about 6-8 months ago I saw some numbers circulating that proposed that media corporations had been actively propped up by the Obama administration.
And oh wow!
I'm half remembering this, so I don't have any data, and like I say, I can't vouch for it, you know, because I was skeptical even while I was reading it. But I know that the opposite is probably a pretty safe bet, because obviously Trump and the media are not friends, and he's not doing any favors.
That's funny. That's one of the very few.
I think that's a place where you can fairly safely say, hey, this isn't 4D chess. Like, Trump
that's exactly
is
what I was about
to
say.
To the media. The media hates Trump. Yeah. And there's not, because he keeps highlighting how corrupt they are and stuff like that. It's not like he's playing this friendly banter. Like, it's not like the heel is going after the face in the ring. The heel is going after the WWE and asking the fans why they're still here.
Right.
You know, and that's tells me that maybe this isn't just, you know, 4D chess, like that the media truly is threatened by Trump.
And the thing about him is, like, they go way, way over the top, and that's a really bad idea. You don't have to try hard to make Donald Trump look bad.
I know, yeah.
But they go way over the top, and then they end up having to issue retractions, and he's got Twitter still, and he can make them pay many times over what they got, because he's ruining their credibility. Well, I mean, they're ruining their own credibility, and he's, you know, just selling them the rope with which to hang themselves.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's exactly what's going on.
That's
crazy.
Pretty much what's happening. Yeah,
If anybody sat down in the media and just allowed themselves to come off of this methamphetamine high that they've been on for 3 years,
mm-hmm.
think clearly and just concoct the news for the day, for one day, you could absolutely destroy Trump. Like, you could just drag him through the absolute mud for, I mean, war crimes, not least of which. And you'd have to get some egg on your boy Obama's face. But, you know, all that, if they want him out that bad, that shouldn't be a bad sacrifice. You know, just say Obama screwed up. You can probably even pin a lot of that on Bush, and although I've noticed they've been buddy-buddy with him recently too, but
they really have.
Yeah, which it creeps me the hell out, but but man, like they won't, they just cannot fucking get it together at all, like, at all.
Yeah, and I think that comparing it to a drug addiction is just absolutely that is an apt comparison. Like, they really are behaving as though they cannot help themselves.
Yeah.
And I mean, I hesitate to use red team nomenclature, but I really do sense that there is something to, like, Trump derangement syndrome. Like, there's actually something that makes them go way outside the normal confines of sanity. Like their worldview is either so damaged that they're acting irrationally, or they've always been irrational, but something has interfered with their ability to keep it under wraps, you know?
For sure. For sure. Yeah. I agree with you there. I think it's understated how bad that was under Obama with conservatives. I think a lot of it had to be hushed up because he was black, and like you could, you know, really kind of beat people down with the racism shit. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of people that just, no matter what Obama did, no matter what he did, he was right, or no matter what he did, he was wrong.
Yes.
But Trump does seem like it is a fever pitch. Like it's a whole octave higher than where it was with Obama, whether you want to attribute that to Obama's race or, he's just a better heel to team, blue than Obama was to team red. I don't know, but, it's certainly it's a whole nother level.
Yeah. And I mean, it's kind of interesting to be in my position. I'll go so far as to say in our position as kind of like not involved libertarian types.
Yeah.
Because you get to see exactly the reaction that happens to everything. And it's like Red Team's reaction to Obama turned up to 11, because one of the first things, thinking back, you know, got what, 2 years almost, is one of the first things was he got to appoint a Supreme Court justice. And the first one was Neil Gorsuch. And mm-hmm. Neil Gorsuch is the human equivalent of mayonnaise. He is completely just there. Like, not that offensive. His judicial record is actually pretty standard, you know? Like, the kind of person you might want on the Supreme Court, like, if you were on the opposition party, you know? Like, yeah, obviously you don't want the wrong team appointing a Supreme Court justice, but as far as it went, it was pretty, pretty okay, you know? Like, and even from my point of view, I'm like, well, you know, his stance on Fourth Amendment seems okay. They could do a lot worse. They went insane. Yeah. Oh, just automatically. I'm like, why would you go so insane so quickly? And then when it came time for the next one, no one took it seriously, because it's like, well, they're going to act as insane over anybody. And again, credibility just destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't want to say it because I don't want to get blamed for manifesting what we all know is going to happen probably in the next couple of months.
Pause, just shouting Wendigo, Wendigo. When I always fuck that up. It's not Wendigo. What is it?
God damn it, Carr. You said it three times. You're not allowed to do that.
Fuck. I know he's probably shouting at the radio, but yeah, keep going.
But once the thing that we know is about to happen, because the most important woman in the world is real sick, once that happens, I really, like, I am trying to prepare myself for the amount of just psychic maelstrom.
It's going to be an absolute shit show.
Yeah, like, I thought that, what's his name, shit, the last one, most recent one, I can't.
Neil
Meathead, or Meathead Kavanaugh.
Yeah,
but like, I thought that one was bad, because that one, like, I paid a little bit of attention while that was happening, and the emotion and tension was so extreme. Like, it was one of those things that I could feel even though I didn't have a stake in it. Like, I started to feel myself, like, get emotional just looking at the battle. This is going to be way worse.
We purposefully avoided talking about it.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, that was one of those, would you call it a psychic maelstrom? That's a good term for
yes.
it. Because it,
psychic
it
maelstrom,
does
yeah.
have the, it's very provocative, you know?
Yeah.
It really makes you think you care, almost, it makes you feel like it matters, you know?
Yeah.
I guess because it could affect you. I think that's what a lot of people felt about the Kavanaugh thing was, you know, it was in the middle of the Me Too movement, and it was one of those Me Too things that people looked at and said, you know, the person who's accusing this guy, first of all, this is very, very convenient, first of all, but second of all, the lack of evidence and the admission on the woman's part that she barely even remembered the incident, and yet it became that big, I think kind of forced everybody on all sides to get in on that action. And
yeah,
you know,
I would agree
now
with that.
Now Kavanaugh's not a guy with a, as you said, Gorsuch is. Kavanaugh was not mayonnaise, right? That could have, they could have dug shit like that up on Gorsuch, and they did not. Kavanaugh, they managed to find shit. You know, I can't imagine the hurdle the next Republican president is going to have after Trump, after the Democrats, because after another 4 years of Donald Trump, it's going to have to swing back. It had just, you would hope or think, right? Like, it would have to balance itself out, as it always does. I don't know. But the next Republican president is going to have a very interesting time, because every move will be tracked.
Yeah, I
see how many
I can't
of our presidents
think that
have blackface pictures by the time all is said and done.
It feels as though the event horizon has shortened so much, so as to be on the order of months rather than, like, you know, decades. You know, it's like beyond about. There's like a couple key events that beyond which, you know, Ginsburg, if you know. If she passes at some point here soon, depending on if Hillary joins, like all of these things, and honestly, it doesn't feel like a, I don't know, like a Romney Obama deal where it's like, it's going to be the same no matter what. Like whoever gets elected,
these two guys are shaking hands behind the you know what I mean?
Exactly. It really does feel like. Oh shit! Like you've got like a lot of really reactionary and a lot of reactionary sentiment really building up, and depending on which way things go, it could be wild.
See, my take on that is I think that you're absolutely right. Now, what I will say is that I think that in practice, what Donald Trump has done and what Hillary Clinton would have done aren't as far away as people think they would have been.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's more just how they do these things is becoming as important to people as what's actually being done. In fact, I would say it's probably more important how things are being done than what's being done, and that's probably not even a crazy thing to say.
No.
But yeah, Donald Trump's doing the same stuff every other president really would be doing. There's nothing revolutionary taking place here as far as policy goes, but yeah, policy's never really persuaded people beyond the, you know, how much of it you can use as a buzzword. Everyone was talking about TPP like anybody knew what TPP was, but everybody would talk about it. It seems like it's just how things are going to get done.
So if you look at what he's actually accomplished, and, you know, you have to, you know, kind of hand wave away Congress's influence on stuff.
Right.
But he got a tax bill, which is fairly standard for a Republican president to do. And he jawboned a little bit about gun control, you know, the red flags and the bump stocks and all of that. I feel like the blue team would have gone further, but accomplished about as much. But again, none of that matters. And something that, you know, no one can check on this right now because my Twitter's deactivated, but I've said several times, the truth of anything no longer matters. All that matters is what people believe, and that all depends on what you can sell.
Yeah, right.
So if you can sell the idea that Donald Trump is helping jobs and he's helping lower taxes, and you put a little bit of truth in there, you know, you help people have a little bit extra on their take home so they have something palpable to look at, and they can say, well, look at this, you know. But by and large, it doesn't matter what the truth is. All that matters is the kayfabe. And the kayfabe is just ratcheting up and ratcheting up and ratcheting up. And we don't have, like, we've got some, like, climactic events that happen. You know, you've got a midterm, and then you've got the upcoming election. But it's ratcheting up. It's not going back down.
Right.
I feel like in the past, it's kind of, you know, after Obama got elected in, was it 2008 now? I feel like people were real amped up. Like, there was a lot of high emotion for, like, the first year.
Right.
And then by the midterms, it was like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Everybody got tired.
Yeah. But that's not happening now.
Yeah, it's not. People are not getting tired now.
Yeah. And one thing, too, is my opinion on the matter is we're running the world a lot closer to the red line because of, like, economic forces.
Okay.
And I think that that's probably going to be probably the dark horse, depending on when that breaks loose, is because, like, the real estate bubble is reinflating again.
Yeah, it is.
The student loan debt thing, like, that's going to be out of hand probably before the next midterm election.
They'll write that one off.
They probably will.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God, that's crazy, right? The idea anybody seriously believes we could go, yeah, we'll write that off.
They will. I mean, and like, there's a lot of things that people have talked about in the past that honestly don't seem as outrageous anymore, like currency conversion, like going from the dollar to something else and using that opportunity to reconfigure the debt structure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Or just renumerating it. It's been a while since I've actually thought about economics because they don't really apply in the modern era. But like there's a lot of stuff that, you know, I've heard about, I've read about, you know, that seems like, oh, that would never happen. We're like 4 weeks away from a lot of crazy shit becoming very normal, you know?
Like what?
Like if we renumerated and went to a different currency.
Oh.
Like, yeah, sure. imagine they go and they're like, well, as part of the student loan repudiation or whatever they end up calling it, bailout or whatever, it's like you come in and you turn in your cash money and you get issued like the credit card, you know, mm-hmm. Snap card, but for everything, you know, or like there's a lot of far out ideas that in 2019. Like I said, I'm willing to believe any conspiracy theory at this point.
Right. Which is a healthy thing to set out there at this point.
Yeah.
So, G-Man, I have one idea, and I agree with you completely on that. Like, we're nearing a point where some big restructuring is going to happen or going to need to happen. And that could include, you know, trying to leverage a different currency and, you know, absolving old debts and yada, 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 obviously. But I was thinking about it and I was thinking, like, you know, if I were Trump and taking him at face value for what he is, and he's, you know, a wheeler, a dealer, a businessman, I think it's really, really safe to assume that the guy hates to lose. I think that is something that is very real about the guy that he can't hide. Like, he absolutely fucking hates to lose. I think he is a super, yep, super competitive dude, and he hates to lose.
Hard agree.
And in so doing, I think that there is a chance. And again, you know, as I've said, the event horizon is so short that we're really just in a lot of ways just spitballing here. But I have kind of thought about some of the posturing that he's been doing, specifically with respect to bringing up over and over again how much we're subsidizing everybody's defense. And I've wondered if he's going to, because right now our economy could use a huge liquidity boost from these, you know, and from these other countries, rather than just writing it, you know, just plugging the cord into itself through the Fed. I have wondered if he's going to try to angle for basically becoming, you know, the paid contractor that we already are, except we don't get paid by all of these countries, and just being like, yo, you guys need to drain your central banks, send it our way, and do something like that. I don't know how, you know, if he could pull it off or anything like that, but I've wondered about some of the posturing that he's taken with respect to these countries that we've, like NATO countries and stuff like that, that we've really grossly subsidized their defense for since World War II.
Yeah. And you, I have picked up on that a little bit. I hadn't thought about that angle specifically, so that's a pretty good it's a pretty good insight. It honestly, it's really hard to predict, because I do think that you're absolutely right. He does hate to lose, but I also feel like this job has been very bad for his attention span. So I feel like we're going to get like a huge bombastic new plan now that we're coming into the election season.
The Orange New Deal.
I gotta say, I'm just to interrupt, your Trump impression is kind of startlingly good.
And it's incredible. It's crazy.
My
dad has his accent. Is what I think does it. Is my dad is from, like, not the same places, you know, where Trump is from, but it's, the accent is very similar. So
right?
I he cracks me up with his mannerisms. They're so, like, I do them myself, and it like you just mid sentence, you just interrupt with a completely different thought is probably the best thing that he does.
Yes, he does do that a lot too. I saw the somewhere on Twitter, I saw somebody post this gif of him, you know how he does the hands thing, like back and forth as he's explaining stuff, and they like put a like an animated accordion in there.
Dude, so strange.
Strange guy. Yeah, I don't know, G-Man, if you've heard, we did a crossover with the Damn Woods, I think it was just Jake, probably 2 or 3 months ago. I can send you the link. I'm not sure if you caught it, but there's like 30 minutes of Bird doing Trump, and I'm like crying trying to podcast. I'm laughing so hard.
He sent John Bolton fucking packing, huh? Which is fantastic. I don't know if we actually brought it up, but that was the content of what the bit was about, was him basically saying, John Bolton, fuck you, your head jerk off, and now he's gone. So, and he's gone. The Syria thing is very interesting. A lot of weird moves.
That's what I'm saying. There's something going on with the foreign policy that it would just, because the thing with, especially with foreign policy, is an object at rest tends to stay at rest, an object in motion tends to stay at motion. There's a lot of motion behind us being world police. So for him to be coming out and doing something like this, I don't know. I just wonder if there's something behind it that we haven't been able to quite piece together.
Turkey in some way has something. Turkey's got something for him. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's you know, Khashoggi stuff. Like, I don't know if it's stuff that he can hold over someone else's head, but it just bizarre. People on the left tend to call him impulsive. And I want to agree with that so badly, that he's so impulsive, but also, you know, these moves seem almost so impulsive that they feel calculated, you know?
Right. Yes.
It's kind of strange.
Yeah, I mean,
he just does this overnight, and nobody stops him. Nobody pulls in. Nobody in his largely, you know, supports us staying there administration, you know, pulls him aside and says, you know, how about we don't do that? Or it's weird. Like, I guess one of two things. Either this is all planned, or somebody told him he's the commander in chief, and he takes that seriously. You know, he goes, all right, I'm the commander in chief. I'm going to call the shots. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It's time for, I might as well call these shots. They don't have to really make sense so much as the shots are being called. Not, I mean, whatever your opinion on the Syria pullout thing is, it seems so just weird, right? Just so weird considering mm-hmm. everything else the administration has done. It's unpredictable. The media is absolutely wild. There's a lot of crazy shit to talk, like, this. It's going to get crazier, but there's a lot of crazy shit. Really strange. I don't remember the Bush era. I remember that it was kind of similar to this, but really not to the same degree.
I mean, I remember the Bush era fairly well because the Bush era was when I started paying attention. Like, I was kind of young when I when like the second Iraq War and Afghanistan War kicked off. So like I didn't know what the fuck was going on, right. But I started to learn more about it as time went on, and then, like, the Obama years kind of helped me realize that, you know, oh, it's just two sides of the same coin.
I think,
you know,
that, it did that for a lot of people.
Yeah, there's like, almost no two better back-to-back presidents, Republican than Democrat, where you're just like, oh, okay, this is just the same shit.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and I feel like if I had been... Like, if I were an older man and I had been cognizant during the Clinton era, it would have been even more clear, you know? Because, like, there was a lot of really shady military actions that happened under Clinton that, one, I was too young to really understand or to be able to analyze. But, two, you also ran into the fact that we weren't in the information age at that point, and now we are. So
right.
That the ability of that to change the scope of the political landscape is difficult to overstate, I think, because up until that point, I mean, like, literally, what would you have done during the first Gulf War except believe the mainstream media's reporting and narrative?
Yeah,
it's crazy.
I guess it's hard probably to imagine, a little suspicious about Vietnam, but like, it was mostly, all right, I'm willing to give this a shot during the first Gulf War.
It's difficult to wrap my mind around that. Even the, I mean, obviously, like, I grew up without, or I mean, my earliest years were without a computer or internet, but like, that was just living my childhood, you know. It's hard for me to imagine a world where, you know, if I see vape pens are killing everyone on the news, I can look it up on the internet and be like, oh, like, two people died or something. You know, it's hard to imagine living in a world where I can't at least try to verify things on my own, whether or not, you know, that one website or whatever is accurate or whatever. But
can you imagine in the 90s trying to convince people to ban a product because two people died from it?
It does seem wild, but there was some wild discussion going on at that time
in the 90s. Everybody would be like, fuck you,
right?
Who cares?
And I think probably the most important thing, because, like, I had computers relatively early on, and I had the internet fairly early as far as Americans go, but I think that the very most important thing is the fact that the rest of the world now has not only they have the internet, but they have cell phones with cameras. And I think that a lot of the things that we're seeing on the geopolitical landscape are because of that monopoly on information being broken. And that's also the reason why we're seeing such a huge, huge, huge pushback against the free flow of information and lots of gatekeeping, either like the direct kind of censorship kind or just from like burying results on Google searches, you know, kind of low key information control. But the genie is out of the bottle. Like, I think that people are starting to really get to the point where they have enough of an inkling of the way things really are that it's like trying to plug all of the holes in a sieve.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like there's just too much. Yeah. And the control structure is large and unwieldy and imprecise. I was actually talking to Jake and a couple other people on the Damwoods Discord the other day about I forget when the video was released. It wasn't very new, but it was independent journalism, and I say that like with full weight, but someone had gone through and done a word for word replacement of video titles on YouTube and found out what got demonetized, as in was marked unfriendly for advertisers,
really?
And what did not.
Okay. That's, I'm sure that'll shed some light on something.
It was crazy. One of the, this was from the perspective of like an LGBT activist group.
Okay.
So they focused on the fact that, for instance, gay, lesbian, trans, and a couple other like similar terms all got you demonetized.
Yep.
The particular video. And you could replace those words with friend or something completely innocuous.
Right.
And it wouldn't be demonetized.
Oh,
everything
wow.
else being the same. And I mean, I fully believe that is the case, because I've seen it from the other side too. Like, I've seen people talking about like right wing talking
yep.
point
yeah.
videos being demonetized. And I come back to this sometimes, probably not as often as I should, but you can't trust those corporations.
No.
Like, if
nope.
they are controlling the flow of information, they are not to be trusted.
Yep.
And like, anything you can do to weasel out from under their power structure is something you should definitely be doing, you know?
Yep. No disagreements at all there.
Yeah, and like, that's just one example. And, you know, YouTube's a Google product now. And one of the, actually, and this is something that just came up the other day, is the fact that they're seriously, like, American corporations are way, way more in bed with the Chinese government than
oh,
ever
yeah.
before.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Like, it is absolutely out of control. And the reports of what's happening that the Chinese government is doing is just absolutely staggering.
Yeah,
know?
I mean, they're trying to establish global hegemony. I mean,
yes.
it's really interesting to see that.
Yeah.
Because it's so American. It's kind of, I did my thesis on things that were happening in China. I've been paying attention, and I still pay attention to them. They are so frighteningly American. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
The control over the media is the same. Yeah, certain websites we get to use, they don't. And certain things they use, we don't. We don't use WeChat. WeChat is all them, but they don't really use Google. They don't need to. They have their things, we have our things. But if you don't think Google has a vice grip on its neck because of the US government, but somehow China does over WeChat, I hate to tell you, governments only really work in one direction, and that's bigger vice grips.
Yep.
So it's always amazing to me to now it's going to be very interesting and concerning. And it is concerning as an American, but it's very interesting and concerning to see America's going to have to go up against a country that is trying to do what America has done for a very, very long time. You know, you talk to China, there's interview upon interview upon interview. There's a good show that Mehdi Hassan hosts on Al Jazeera, and they bring on people from China, like security directors in China, and all the security directors in China are talking about how China needs to start getting involved in the Middle East in order to secure its own sovereignty. It's like, ah, that sounds so almost so comfortably familiar that it's I don't know, ironic might not be the word, but yeah. Anyway, it just to say that is just we're coming to a time where now this is going to become a problem too, right? The global community is not so much of a community as America wishes that it was, right? Because it's always a community you dictate the rules for. I don't know. Hope that's not scaremongering.
I think that your analogy that China is trying to be America is spot on, because their behavior is very, very similar, except China doesn't even have the pretense of restraint.
No, they don't. They don't even play like they do, right? There's no, liberal factions that have any say in that country. They're correct. All political realists, all of them, mm-hmm. every single one of them.
I think probably the easiest method to identify and verify that this is, an analogy worth consideration is China's behavior in Africa.
Yes.
They're just straight up colonizing.
Oh yeah.
Like,
wait, is that right? I'm not sure I'm familiar with this.
Yeah. China's been basically escalating their military involvement in Africa, and the spheres of influence are increasing, and they're tightening up on Africa. Yeah.
It's old school British colonialism, but with China in Africa. And none of the restraint of British Anglo-Saxon sensibilities, whatever there may have been, that's all gone. Like, China is there to extract the resources and take control, and they're making no bones about it, and they don't care who knows it.
Yeah, it's almost like, from everybody else's perspective, that's kind of what we do, right? Mm-hmm. That's kind of what we've always done. I mean, the United States probably has a, I guess, quote, hard quote on this one, better record with the international community, and by that I mean European countries, it's just very interesting to see that we're heading towards a real a cataclysm of many different events are coming.
I very much agree with that, and I think a lot of them are things that can be seen right now, but are going to impact the market as black swan events.
Right.
Because one of the things that you can see now, if you go and look, is the angle that China's taking with their colonialism is very heavily influenced on controlling rare earth minerals.
Is that right? I thought it had to do with trade ports, but yeah, maybe that they all
trade fall. Ports is important too, but their resource extraction, because right. I mean, Africa has been extracted pretty heavily.
Yeah.
But right now, the biggest and most important thing is rare earth minerals, lithium, right. cobalt, and all the stuff that you need to run a modern society. Right. So you're going to run into a situation where China is going to control the supply at all stages. So right. from extraction of the raw minerals to production of the finished electronics, which, I mean, everything is going to run on electronics and oil. And that's what the most important things are to watch. Because, food production is important, but I think that it's kind of not as bleak as a lot of people think it is,
Cause that's always the excuse that you hear, defense secretary in China, among other things. They always use that excuse is, we have 1 billion people to feed. It's like, wait, what does that have to do with you of being in Eastern Africa.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
That is always
you're not growing rice there.
Yeah, you're not growing rice in Africa. You're taking out rare minerals and controlling the ports and calling it your second continent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like, those are the things I think are probably going to become really important. Now, I can't predict, you know, like, what it's going to look like just because things are so volatile, and you've got a lot of players that are starting to angle harder than they have, at least in my lifetime, because, you know, I was born in the mid-80s, and we were just coming out of the Cold War, and, like, Russia wasn't in any shape to do anything.
Sure.
China was just starting their own industrial revolution.
Right.
Japan was riding kind of high. America was riding kind of high. And then, like, you know, the NATO countries. But now you're starting to see the pendulum swing to where the NATO countries are not as great. And the EU is not helping that. America is not as great. Russia's on the uptick. China's on a big, big uptick. And the roles of the particular chess pieces are changing, I feel like. Yeah. And no one wants to go from being queen to being pawn.
Yeah, it's funny, like, America needs to stop world policing. Like, that's
right.
That we all agree with. And in fact, the world policing probably is putting us in the situation where we are right now, as far as not being able to afford world policing anymore, but also overextending and making so many commitments that we have absolutely no credit in the international community. We have no ability to exercise any of our own sovereignty outside of our own borders. And that's really because of the citizenry anyway, because of all of our guns. It's so interesting to you think you don't want to be a world police officer. Nope, we don't want that. It's really interesting to see what happens now that another country wants to come and be the world police. For people from our perspective, right? You look at them and you go, well, what do we think about that, right? Like, it's bad, obviously. It's bad. Right. But it's going to happen. This not have worked out. If we were never, you know, world police to begin with, China probably would have come up and tried to be the world police anyway. It's just interesting to see that's occurring.
I think that it's pretty much inevitable because
it depends on the nature pops first.
It's the nature of empires is to rise and then fall. And if we as people living on this landmass, if we're lucky, it'll just be a fall and not a collapse.
Yeah, I don't. There's no empire has ever like collapsed. Everybody wants to say that empires collapse. Real multicultural, world-spanning empires, it doesn't happen. Roman Empire didn't collapse. It took hundreds of years for it to fall apart, and then by that time, it became new things. Everybody says the Soviet Union collapsed. Soviet Union is not an empire, and beyond that, even if it was, you know, we didn't know it was coming. It's not really a collapse. People in Russia are still there today, and like you said, they're on an uptick, so... I'm not really worried about a collapse or a boogaloo event, although, you know, don't get me too excited about that, but I'm not, you know, it's just we're going to come up against some things that are going to, at the very least, test libertarians a lot. I felt that way about, you know, the Syria pullout, and I've been having a lot of discussions with a lot of people close in the in-group about it, and it's like, I didn't think that there would be discussions about that, right? But this is something that's challenging to us. And it's only going to get more challenging once America stops being the top dog and we don't really have, you know, 100% of the privilege anymore to say, you know, let them handle it. Because, you know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a very odd situation to be in. And I don't necessarily like how it feels.
No, I don't like it either. That's my whole point. I don't like how this feels, you know?
Yeah. Because it's like, you know, the goal is kind of, you know, to shrink the size of the gun that's pointed at all of our heads.
Right.
But
right
now, it's not necessarily the gun is shrinking. It's Well, there's a new gun in town.
Yes, there's a small gun that is now smaller, and then a guy in the distance with a very large gun.
Yes, and it's like, oh, well, shit.
Yeah, right. It's rocking a hard place, which is, I guess that's where we usually find ourselves, right?
Yeah, and I mean, in my opinion, like, and I was talking about, again, I was on the Dan Woods Discord talking about this the other day, but my opinion is that the same solutions, the solutions are the same for everything going forward, because we can see the American Empire is waning. We can see the Chinese Empire is waxing. The Russians are kind of a wild card. Middle East is a wild card as usual. The NATO countries generally are waning. So you can expect soft economies, recessions, depressions. You can expect increased state control, both over population flow, information control, gun control is probably the most important one. So the solutions to all of those things are still the same. Get useful skills, get assets, tools, get out of the population centers where it's easier to be controlled.
Lose your guns in a boating accident.
Lose your guns in a boating accident. Minimizing counterparty risk is an economic term that I love, because it applies to real life too, because it's like knowing where your next meal comes from should not be like something that a lot of people have an impact over. Like,
right, yeah.
You know, if someone in your household goes crazy and like throws all the stuff in the cupboards away, that's one thing, but like not having, you know, any food put back, not having a water filter, you know, there's all these very simple things that can be done to minimize the impact no matter what happens, you know.
Yeah,
like
right.
Even if we continue to drag it out and we don't have a collapse event, which I think is probably a fair assumption. Like, I really do think it's going to be more of a decline and not a collapsing event. Although the only thing I will say is, historically, we haven't had the sort of leverage that has gone into modern empire, because things can take place so much faster,
right?
And everything being interconnected, it gives it some resiliency, because there are a lot of people actively trying to prevent things from burning down, but there's a lot of flammability.
Sure.
Effectively.
Yeah. Pretty much.
But again, I mean, it's just the same sort of things are going to help everybody, and I mean, that's a big reason why I am, you know, semi-ironically joking, first it's a joke, then it's a lifestyle, right? An Appalachian separatist.
Right,
you know?
Sure, of course.
Like,
yeah, you know, it's funny, but it's also, I'm happy out here.
Yeah, it's like, well, you know, this is a good place. The mountains are high and the emperor's far away. Is, you know, I can't say, you know, too much bad about it, other than, you know, yeah, it might suck if you're the kind of person that has lived your whole life in a city, but as you can see, like, just people that are living in cities are already having a tough time.
That's true.
You know?
I can confirm this.
Yeah, and I mean, depending on, like, the general population and, like, political landscape, it goes from, like, kind of rough, but you can live pretty easily, to fuck, man, we're like not that far away from Mad Max in San Francisco areas, you know?
Like, I guess, yeah. We need more bikes, and
yeah,
and there needs to be more desert.
Yeah.
Breaking news, and Donald Trump allows the Turkish military to storm Appalachia.
The Turks might be like one of the few forces that have like the mountain warrior spirit enough to actually
to take down Appalachia. That's the next move. You better be careful. Once the country collapses, the Turkish are moving in.
Yep.
Oh man, G-man, this was like a seminar. I feel like like a seminar in depression and hopelessness. Well, this episode was brought to you by hopelessness.
Yeah, see, this is what you guys are getting. You're getting all the exclusive content right now.
Yeah, right. Yeah, this would have been like a 30 tweet thread.
Right. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, we're restricting supply, and so we're just artificially boosting demand for.
Well, actually, it's true, Carl. At the moment, we have monopoly control over G-Man's content at this precise moment. We have full control.
Yes. Mostly that's because if I move, I'm afraid that my microphone will unplug itself. So.
Oh, man.
Right. Yeah.
Well, good. G-Man, let's take this one out on that note. That was very good. You got any plugs or because you're off the Twitter thing for now, no plugs?
Yeah, I'm off the hell site for the moment. I'm probably gonna reactivate because if you don't reactivate within 30 days, it just nukes your account.
Oh my god.
Jesus. So maybe by the time this hits the airwaves, I'll be back on.
Okay.
I honestly haven't added any new followers, and I've had a lot of requests. I'm like, how are these people finding out about me? I don't tweet publicly anymore. But
yeah, that's interesting. I wonder how that is. I don't know.
Yeah, so if listeners, if you're wanting to follow me, like, you know, send a tweet at me or something so that I can see, you know, because it's real weird to get a blind follow request because I'm like, how are you finding out what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Are you a Fed? You're probably a Fed.
Well, they may just be listening to old podcast episodes or whatever.
No, that is true. No, yeah. they're feds.
They're feds. Yeah.
They're definitely feds. Chinese feds.
Probably. We've learned that today. All right, man. Let's pack this one up. That was good. I don't really. Was this a Halloween episode? Not really, but it was spooky.
I mean, I think we covered spooks and feds and some pretty creepy stuff coming down the line. So I think it definitely qualifies as an October episode.
Last October we did like two episodes straight. We did Philosophical Zombies, which was kind of spooky. And then we did an episode, might have been with Dino, where we did one with cults. And then we were like, we kind of have to do libertarian stuff again. So I think we did like another doomsayer episode like we just did. That seems to be the trend, so I'm happy about that.
Yep.
All right, let's move out of here. Cool. Right, man, thank you very much, appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Anytime you guys want to have me back, I'm in for it. So.
Hell yeah. Maybe once you get back on the website, we'll help you build that secret following of yours again. What are you probably sell a ridiculous amount of followers.
It's kind of surprising. Like I don't hate being a private account right now because like it does impact like dopamine hits after a certain point.
Sure.
It's like, oh my god, what's happening to me? Am I an e-celeb?
Right. Oh no. Oh god, the worst thing.
Crack
off
the old double-aught toothbrush on that one. Fuck me.
An e-celeb. Well, thank you for gracing us with your presence. The king
absolutely,
of e-celebs.
I'm really glad to be here. Anytime.
All
right. Cool. Right on. Well, I guess with that, we'll close it out. And until next week, keep your hands on the wheel.
Ooh.
All right. Keep your skillet greasy.